on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Wednesday, March 18th, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, in 2026, a lot is happening in markets, mainly politically, geopolitically, and obviously that has an impact on economies, industries, and of course, the broader market. Today was Fed Day, and that is always something the market pays a lot of attention to. So we'll look into that, even though, frankly, there wasn't a whole lot to discuss. No move and no real changes to their future path of policy expectations compared to what the market was expecting. But we'll dig into that and much, much more during this hour. But most importantly, will be what's on your mind. How can we help you become a better investor? What questions do you have? How's your portfolio performing in this environment? How has it performed in 2026? Don't think this is going to be a flash in the pan. We have probably a number of years of political, geopolitical chaos before we settle into a new norm. We're in the midst of a lot of change, which means your portfolio can operate in the same manner that it did a decade ago or two decades ago. You have to think differently, think outside the box, understand the trends that are taking place in markets and economies. And so that's what this hour and each and every hour on Invest Talk is about. Helping you become a better investor, giving you perspective and data so that you can make better decisions with your money. Now, in just a bit, I will run down the market performance for today and the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we're going to tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, I was looking at your take on UL Solutions, ticker tape ULS. Stock I've owned for the last few months now, and I'm up a little bit. It's had a good run, so I'm just wondering if now's a good time to sell it and move on, or if I should continue holding. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for going.
Looking at UL Solutions, they provide testing, inspection, and certification services within the tech hardware space. So its customers make industrial products, they make medical devices, consumer electronics, information technology products, appliances, HVAC, etc. But a $17 billion market cap, earnings supposed to be up 11% this year, 12% next year, and it is approaching its highs, which it made back in late last year. Well, the market has rolled over. So there's clearly relative strength. I like relative strength. Relative strength right now is 87. Very strong. Probably even higher if you're looking over the past couple of weeks since the war in Iran started. Return on equity is 39%, high profitability. No debt. Love that. Free cash flow, about $400 million. And it's at the highest level since, what's this, December? Since December 3rd. Now, it is up into a little resistance. So maybe you could say you take a little bit off the table. But considering what's happening in the broader market, I hold this name. Once again, great balance sheet, good profitability, good cash flow, great relative strength. It is in the heart of the AI data center build-out, meaning they test the end products and the software for those products. They inspect them, they certify them. It doesn't matter what the end technology is, they're the ones that are making sure it's good to go out of the factory. So I don't see a lot of reason to trim it or say sell it. Now, trimming it may be because it's in resistance, but that relative strength tells me that this resistance in near term is probably transitory. So I'd hold it. Let's take a live call. Dan in Walnut Creek wants to talk about precious metals.
Hey there, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. Since precious metals seem to be in a little bit of a downtrend right now. It's a good time to buy.
I do think we're getting to that point where it's going to be a nice buying opportunity. Now, we still may see a little bit more down from here, but we're starting to enter the zone. And when I say the zone, it means the area where these stocks broke out. Now, are you talking about gold and silver itself or the miners?
The miners, mainly. You know, they held on for a little while, but they're starting to go down a little bit now, too.
Yeah, they pulled back. The GDX hit the lowest level today since early January. So even with this large pullback, it's actually still up on the year. And it's approaching levels where you saw the peak back in October and you had a bit of a sell-off that refreshed everything, went through a consolidation period, and then broke out kind of the beginning of the year. And that high in October was right around $85. GDX today closed at 88. So I think there's support in this area. When you have a pivot, we call it a pivot point, where it hit a high and reversed for a period of time, and then it broke back above and broke out of that pivot point. Oftentimes, when it returns to that price after the subsequent sell-off, like you're getting now, that is good support. And so, is there another 2-3% down on miners maybe over the next week or two? Absolutely. I think that's certainly possible. But this is that zone. Mid-80s is where you want to pick up GDX or the subsequent miners within it if you feel you need to up your position in precious metals. Now, a lot of people have a lot already, especially if you listen to this program for a period of time. You probably have bought some precious metals and you own a lot. So maybe you're feeling a little pain in the near term, but clearly it's still in a broader uptrend and it's starting to enter that zone of adding to positions, especially if you maybe trimmed your positions over the past a couple months ago when I was saying, you know, sentiment was a bit frothy. Now it's starting to get reset, and I think that's a good buying opportunity.
Can I ask one more question, please?
Sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What about copper? I know that Southern Copper has been going down, and I don't know if that's because of issues and people are concerned with Mexico, or if that's just
no, it's simply industrial epic. When the input to industrial products is energy of some kind, whether it's natural gas or oil, then it makes it less economical to produce those goods. And that means less money or less demand for things like copper. There's also the stronger dollar that's an aspect here. There's a dearth of supply coming out of the Middle East as well. So there's a lot of reasons for this pullback in metals in general, and copper, I think, is just getting caught up in that. And I also think that we're close to getting to a point where it's a good place to pick up some names. Thanks for the call. Now let's take a quick break. Lots to come, and I welcome your calls right now. And I'll give you a rundown of today's market activity next. So hang on.
KPP Financial is excited to announce the third annual InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. Instead of basketball brackets, Justin and Luke will be watching companies perform head-to-head in an epic showdown. InvestTalk participants can compete for the $1,000 grand prize and demonstrate their market prowess by locking in their stock victory predictions. And get this, if the contest winner is also following the InvestTalk YouTube channel, Justin will bump up the prize to $1,500. So if you are ready to test your skills in this unique competition, do not wait. It's free to join the fun. Visit investtalk.com and search Market Madness. Then submit your bracket predictions to enter. You better hurry. Your last chance to enter is today at midnight. In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
The time is running out. I hope you have told your friends about our third annual InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Instead of basketball brackets, we're matching companies head-to-head in an epic showdown. The winner will win a $1,000 grand prize. And if you are a subscriber to our InvestTalk YouTube channel, we'll bump that up to $1,500 as well. But you do need to submit your bracket by midnight tonight. So if you're going to do it, you need to do it right now. It starts tomorrow. So head over to investtalk.com to submit your bracket. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's what we have, time permitting. Our main focus point is about mortgage rates and if it's going to kill the spring housing market. And we'll look at some recent data. And then we have other topics. One is in regards to inflation. Inflation expectations were rising, or reports were rising before the war in Iran and $100 oil. But now inflation expectations in the market are rising as well, but only up until a point. So we'll look at that data. And then lastly, if we have time, we'll check in on consumer spending before the Iran war. Everything's in context now because these last 2 weeks are going to be very impactful to the broader economy. And you've seen that in markets already. So we'll dig into those stories. We also have voice bank calls. One is on Hertz Global and the other is on investing apps. And of course, some questions that came in via the comment section over on the InvestTalk YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, what are we pivoting to? Are we pivoting to a caller? Voicemail. Let's go to a voicemail call right now.
Hi, I wanted to know if using such apps as the Cash app for investments is a legit way to get into the game of investing. Thanks.
Now, it varies mostly by what app you're talking about. I'm not a huge fan of the apps when it comes to investing. Okay. Now, they can be good when it comes to saving, helping you save. But the problem is that you need to be educated when you're investing. And most of these apps aren't really educating you. They're just getting you bought into their ecosystem and wants you making trades. And they don't have usually the full features of a larger brokerage like a Schwab or a Fidelity or an E-Trade, et cetera. So the Cash app, they don't offer options, bonds, mutual funds, et cetera. So mainly just stocks, ETFs. And that can be fine, but are there any other resources they give you? Research resources, mainly? That's the question. So these can be good to transfer assets or transfer money. They can be good to save in some sort of way, but you should always be actually investing on a real brokerage platform. I don't even consider Robinhood a great investing platform. They gamify everything to make it look cool and fun, but it's a more serious endeavor. And so I would always recommend the big brokerage firms because you're going to get a lot more, better customer service. You have more flexibility in your investment options, et cetera. Let's go talk to John in San Rafael looking at Eli Lilly.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Wanted to get your opinion on Lilly. I have it currently in a diversified portfolio. I've had it for quite a while, so I have a pretty big gain. And I was just wondering, it's in the tax sheltered, so if I were to sell out of it, there'll be no tax. Just want to know about what would you do as far as holding on. Maybe it's maybe a 2% part of my whole portfolio going forward. Is it a long-term buy, or what would you think at this time?
Well, I've always said this GLP-1 craze is a bit overblown. There's a lot of side effects, a lot of problems, especially for those that don't really need it. Now, if you're overweight and that's a big problem for you, it can be a lifesaver in many instances. So I certainly recognize that. But a lot of people are using it when they're already relatively, you know, they have a low body fat percentage, et cetera, and it reduces your muscle and causes a lot of potential problems. And so I've seen these throughout the years. They usually spike and then they fade. And I think this will eventually fade. And so I think the valuation on this name at 40 times earnings is way too high. It's too expensive. And so I would sell it and move on. I think there's better opportunities in this market. Now we're heading into a break. We thank you for helping us achieve more than 62 million downloads in our history, but we'd love to hear your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Let's go with a YouTube comment question. And Shane Slate says, what's your take on Hertz? High short interest, Bill Ackman investment, travel in Q1 strong, CEO turnaround narrative. So Hertz has been languishing for some time. It lost money in 2024, 25, and expected to lose money this year, but return to profits next year, even though those expectations are declining as well. And this has been in a pretty solid downtrend ever since they went public. I think they went private for a little while, then they went public back in 2021. And really, it's been in a downtrend ever since. A good example of an IPO that you just never wanted to touch. It IPO'd around $20 per share, and it's been in a downtrend pretty much ever since. And now it's at $4.18. And why is it in a downtrend? Because they have a ton of debt, and their free cash flow is negative. I don't see a reason for optimism of a turnaround. I just don't. There's now going to be a lower amount of travel. You have the issues with the TSA funding, and then the cost of airline flights is going to go up considerably because of the jet fuel costs. And consumers are just going to have less discretionary spending, which means they are going to rent cars less. There's a high short interest on this for a very good reason. It is a name that looks to be on the path to bankruptcy. That's why it's in such a long downtrend. So you're about Bill Ackman bought it, narrative around a CEO turnaround. But what do we always say about investing in narratives? Don't invest in narratives. Invest in good businesses with good cash flows and good balance sheets. This is the opposite. This is the reason why there's a high short interest. Or could there be some good news that comes out that makes it a little less likely that they go bankrupt and therefore you get a big short squeeze because of that high short interest? Sure, absolutely. Is that an investment thesis? No, it's speculation. So if you want to speculate on that, great. If you want to invest, this is not the name for you. Let's keep things rolling and drop in another listener question now from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. I had a quick question about stock SBSW, Sebane Stillwater. It's been on my watch list for a couple of years now, and I'm just kind of wanted to get your opinion on it. I'm having a tough time kind of getting a deep dive in on some of their numbers. I appreciate any insight. Thanks. Bye.
No problem. Looking at Sibanye Stillwater, and this is symbol is SBSW. They're out of South Africa. And they mine for gold, rhodium, palladium. Those are the main ones. South Africa is 73% of the revenue. The U.S., 20%. Australia, 4%. Europe, 2%. Now, this was down on its luck for a period of time, a long period of time, until the beginning of last year when it bottomed right around $3. Hit a recent high of 21, but it's pulled back to 12. So you can see the volatility here. And you have to be very comfortable with that volatility. With that said, I kind of like it. But it's mainly a play on palladium that goes into catalytic converters. And there's a big reason why this is recovered, not just because the dash for all types of metals, but there's still that continued demand for internal combustion vehicles. It hasn't taken over the world like everyone had expected. So there's still consistent demand for their business. Earnings were up 334% last year to 59 cents from 14 cents the previous year. And then this year, they're supposed to earn $3.34. So if that's true, $12 is pretty cheap, even if they're only going to make $263 next year. So to me, this is very high risk, but I like the risk. I like that. They also produce nickel, chromium, all different types of copper, cobalt, all different types of metals. And I like that diversity here. Now, there's some jurisdictional risks with South Africa, but in general, South Africa is relatively stable compared to many others in the African continent. So I'm going to give Sibanye-Stillwater, SBSW, a thumbs up. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Should you invest during war volatility? We're going to look at a market strategy guide. Market veterans are advising investors not to let Iran, the Iran war, induce volatility, scare them out of quality stocks. The key is distinguishing between temporary geopolitical noise and fundamental business challenges. That story is for tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
KPP Financial is excited to announce the third annual InvestTalk Market Madness Contest. InvestTalk participants can compete for the $1,000 grand prize. So if you are ready to test your skills in this unique competition, do not wait. It's free to join the fun. Visit InvestTalk.com and search Market Madness. Then submit your bracket predictions to enter. You better hurry. Your last chance to enter the Market Madness contest is today at midnight.
I don't know about you, but it already feels like spring to me. Here in Laguna Beach, it is in the 80s today. Pretty hot. Now, officially, spring does not start until Friday, but we're all, for all intents and purposes, we are there. So we're going to touch on the housing market as our main focus point today and spring selling season that is fresh upon us. Now, there's a recent report about the housing market for the month of February. U.S. existing home sales beat expectations because of lower mortgage rates, a moderation in home price growth as well. But there's still a lot of tight supply that's constraining activity. The good news is affordability was improving, say that. And the share of first-time homebuyers is at the highest level in 5 years. So does that mean the housing market is turning a corner? Far from it. Especially with now this war that is going to tighten pocketbooks, reignite inflation, and has already pushed interest rates up. Mortgage rates back above 6%. Whereas for most of the year, up until the war, mortgage rates were below 6. Home sales overall last month were up 1.7% on a seasonally adjusted basis, up to 4.09 million units. That's up from 4.02 in the previous month. Economists are only expecting 3.89 million units sold. Remember, last month's sales represent contracts that were signed in December and January. And that's really when mortgage rates were down a lot. So what regions did the best? Clearly, it was the West. Sales were up 8.2%. The South also did okay, up 1.6%. Midwest up 1.1%. But the Northeast region was pretty rough. Sales were down 6% in that region. So West dragging us up, Northeast dragging us down, and the other two regions, marginal gains. Overall home sales fell 1.4% year over year. So despite the beating of expectations, you're still seeing a housing market that is deteriorating from a sales perspective, and that's with low mortgage rates. The median existing home price last month increased 0.3% from a year ago to $398,000. Now, the National Association of Realtors, their housing affordability index actually ticked up to 117.6 in February from 117.1 in January. And that's all the way up from 103.1 a year ago. And affordability improved in all the regions. That's the good thing. But that's not translating into a ton of new transactions. And now with mortgage rates higher and pocketbooks tighter and more people worried probably about their job, you're going to see another tick down in transactions. Inventory increased 2.4%. That's kind of a positive because buyers have a little bit more to choose from. But still at 1.29 million units, that's still well below the pandemic levels of 1.5 and 1.6 million units. So inventory is still down from those pre-pandemic levels. Why? Because there's not a lot of forced sellers. Distressed sales, including foreclosures, made up only 3% of transactions. That was unchanged from a year ago. So you're not seeing a tick up in forced sales and distressed sales. Typically hangs around the 2 to 3% mark. That's why you're not seeing prices decline materially. They're just kind of flatlining. Now, I've said this for a while. We're going into a period where there's going to be a housing market correction, mostly in time, not in price very much, most likely. Now, you'll have negative real returns, meaning after you back out inflation, you'll probably have flat to negative returns on the housing prices in general. Obviously, there's different housing markets. I'm just talking nationwide. Supply was up 4.9% from a year ago. And at February's sales pace, that's 3.8 months of supply of current inventory, up from 3.6 months a year ago. Typically, when that gets above five, that's when you really have a strong buyer's market. And that's when you're probably going to get actual nominal price declines, meaning more pressure from sellers to offload their property because it's going to sit too long. Right now, the median days on market is still 47, up from 42 a year ago. Higher, but not crazy. 47 days, that's a relatively normal number. First-time homebuyers kind of for 34% of sales, up from 31 a year ago. But a healthy market of first-time homebuyers is about 40. So it's getting better, but it's still not where it needs to be. So the question is, will mortgage rates kill the spring housing market? I think, yeah, to a degree. Now, is it going to crash the market? No. This is where people need to separate their vision of the history of 08 and all the housing crash where prices fell 50% across most markets, because that was a distressed seller's market. There were a ton of distressed sellers, foreclosures. You're not getting that now. So this is likely going to be a 3 to 5 year period where you're going to get a very low level of sales, negative real returns on the actual nominal price of the home. And so if you're a real estate investor, you have to focus on cash flow. If you are just a buyer of real estate to live in, you buy it for utility, not for making money on the price appreciation, at least for the next 3 to 5 years. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to a question that came in via the Vestalk voice bank. You can call anytime, 24/7. Hope you know the number. As always, it's 888-99-CHART.
Calling about SPH, Suburban Propane Partners. Been on my watch list for quite a while and kind of looking at that and wanting to know what your guys' valuation on that one is. And maybe if we're kind of at a good buy point here to get in, or what your guys' thoughts are on that one. Appreciate all you guys do and keep up the good work. Thanks.
Looking at Suburban Propane, this is a master limited partnership. And like all limited partnerships, you are going to get a K-1 if you invest in it. So it will complicate your tax situation. Even if it's in an IRA, even if it's in a 401k, if you get more than, I believe it's $1,000. They change the tax laws all the time. But from last time I checked, it was $1,000. If you get more than that, then it complicates your tax situation. And that 6.3% dividend yield is going to be taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. It is not a qualified dividend. So understand that as well. It's not the same as your dividend coming from a Procter & Gamble or a Coke or a Pepsi, et cetera. Those are the bad things, if you call them that. Could be more bad for some people. If you're not a very high tax bracket, that's probably what you want to really avoid. If you're in a low tax bracket, it's in a taxable account, you're okay with the tax situation, then you go for it. Because the trends are good. Relative strength is 70. Earnings supposed to be up 11% this year, flat next year, but trading at 10 times multiple. And they market and distribute propane, renewable propane, fuel oil, refined fuels. And clearly this will be in more demand as the price of oil and natural gas worldwide go up. Return equity is 21%, solid. They have a bit of debt on their balance sheet. Don't love that, but once again, their earnings are going up and they're consistent. They're solid. Cash flow is on decline. That worries me a little bit. Shares outstanding are also going up. That also worries me a little bit. I don't like to see a consistent uptrend in shares outstanding. Their payout ratio is 64%, but their cash dividend pay ratio is 137%. What does that mean? It means they're paying out 37% more in their dividend than they're getting in cash flow from their business. That is why their debt, let's see if their debt going up. Yeah, debt's going up. Shares outstanding are going up. And so I don't think that dividend is going to go up or be sustainable over the long term. In fact, it's been flat it's been in decline. Back in 2017, they were paying 88 cents a share in dividends. Then it fell in 2018. Sorry, I just clicked on that. 2018 to about, 60 cents. Then it fell again to 30 back in 2021 during the pandemic. And now it back up to 32, but that was as of late 2021. And it hasn't gotten anywhere since. And based on the trends of debt and shares outstanding and that cash dividend pay ratio, which is rising, that's not a good thing. I think that dividend will eventually get cut. And when the market starts to sniff that out, the prices will decline. So while I kind of like the chart, I kind of like the current trends, I don't like those underlying business fundamentals. So to me, this wouldn't be a long-term hold because it's paying out too much in a dividend. That dividend's likely to get cut. It's issuing more shares. It has a lot of debt, et cetera. So I'm going to pass on SPH, Suburban Propane Partners Limited Partnership. Let's talk about inflation. Central banks are taking notice of how the oil shock is hitting inflation expectations. Cost of living is already going up before this war. And now we had the Fed meeting today, and they're clearly on hold because they need to see how the Iran-related energy supply shock will impact the broader economy, both demand as well as inflation. Will this be temporary or will it drag out? The market is clearly concerned. Oil prices are up 70% this year and up 50% from a year ago. Gas prices are up 25% over the past 12 months and still climbing. And like I said, inflation was already on the rise before this. And Bank of America's monthly global fund manager survey conducted between March 6th and March 12th, so after the start of the war, showed that a net 45% of asset managers expect higher global inflation over the next year compared to just 9% a month ago. And less than a fifth expect lower interest rates ahead, their lowest amount in 3 years. Now, how's the market pricing this? Well, one-year inflation swaps are pricing consumer price inflation to go to 3%. And that's for the first time since last October. And almost 1 percentage point higher than where we were at the start of this year. And if you go out further, many years ahead, it doesn't fall below 2.5% for 5 years. And break-even inflation data, so this is how tips are being priced, is that for the next 5 years, inflation will average about 2.65%, the highest level in more than a year. And this is being repeated across markets around the world, especially in Europe, because they're heavily exposed to energy inputs. Now, we still don't have a lot of data from the last couple of weeks to really understand the true impact on inflation. So this is the best we can go with. How are markets viewing this? Now, before this, New York Fed's survey showed 1 to 5 year inflation expectations gravitated to 3% before the spike in oil prices. The market isn't expecting inflation to fade for over 5 years. So this is the early reading on the impact of the war and high oil prices. And that's in an economy where net exporters of oil. But it still is having an impact on our economy, and it will continue to do so for a period of time until we get to more reasonable prices, say sub 80. So I want to highlight that because this is going to be the narrative for the next month or two or three or four, however long this goes on, is what downstream impact this is having on our broader economy. Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's tackle another YouTube comment question. JDude8 says, Justin has mentioned aluminum price increases related to straight closure. What would you think about investing in Alcoa or CENX Century Aluminum or both? And I would say both is probably the best answer here. Now, Century is much smaller. Alcoa is about a $16 billion market cap versus Century is at about a $5 billion market cap. Both have strong balance sheets, small amount of debt for the size of their business, good cash flow. Alcoa definitely has better profitability metrics, return on equity right around 19%, versus Century Aluminum, that is trading around 3%, but had been as high as 54% as of late. Century Aluminum is going to be more volatile. It's going to move a lot. And you have to be willing to take that risk. Alcoa is the safer play. Century does not pay a dividend. Alcoa pays 0.6%, so not big, but something. Both have strong earnings growth, as you would expect. And so my answer would be, how much risk do you want to take? Century Aluminum has more upside, but more downside, and has lower or less history of consistent profitability and high profit metrics. Alcoa is going to be more consistent as they're larger, more diversified in their business, and a dividend. So if you want that, that's what I would go with. Depends on what you want. I would probably buy a little bit of both so you hedge on both sides. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about the consumer. Consumer spending came out recently, and the U.S. consumer did pretty well, even with higher prices. Now, despite the slightly larger than expected increase in spending in the report by the Commerce Department, other data hinted to more downside risk to the overall economic outlook, especially after seeing a sharp slowing of growth in the fourth quarter of GDP. Non-defense capital goods orders, excluding aircrafts, which usually is a good proxy for business spending, was unchanged in January. And when you adjust for inflation, consumer spending was barely up at all. And this is important because the consumer is 2/3 of the economy, as we always say. Overall spending was at 0.4%. Analysts expected it to be at 0.3%, so it did beat that. But once again, most of that's just inflation. Nominal spending was driven by a handful of categories: healthcare, housing and utilities, financial services and insurance, and mainly due to higher prices. There's also increasing spending on food, recreational goods, vehicles, furnishing, and durable household equipment, mainly because of tariffs. But spending on discretionary services, such as food at restaurants and bars, as well as hotel and motel stays, they dropped, showing that consumers are cautious. And overall spending on clothing and footwear declined. So it's clear that the consumer is kind of tapped out. And the war volatility is going to make this worse. And now that you're seeing a decline in equity prices, that's going to hit the steadiest of the consumer, and that is the wealthy. They may be forced to cut back their spending. And this could be a vicious cycle. And that's why it's so important for this spike in oil prices to be very transitory, cannot drag on. The savings rate did increase to a six-month high at 4.5% from 4% in December, mainly because income grew 0.9%. That's the positive here. So that's a summation of the overall consumer. I'm Justin Klein, and I want to remind you of the KP Financials Parallel Investing. When we make a trade for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves as well. Same time, same price, same percentage. We invest right alongside our clients. No special treatment. We share the same risk and potential for success. You can learn more about it by heading over to investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes and Spotify, as well as our YouTube channel. And don't forget to sign up for our InvestTalk Market Madness contest. Get all the details now at investtalk.com, and hurry, because the contest closes at midnight tonight. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.